The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Hello and welcome once again to It Came From The Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. With me in the studio, I have our senior correspondent, Charlie Saladino.
How's everybody doing?
And as always, we have Brian, the engineer, in the booth helping us out.
Yay, Brian.
Now, usually we have our very own Hassan Godwin on the phone, but today it's a very special day. We not only have Hassan Godwin on the phone, say hi, Hassan.
Hi, Hassan.
We also have our guests calling in right now because they are so awesome. They are able to call in and have us throughout the entire show. Is our friends of the show, longtime friends, we've known them for years, is Jordan and Jared Burrell from Loaded Barrel Studios. Say hi, guys.
Hey.
What's going on? How's it going?
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Hey, guys. Man, we're sorry we couldn't be there today.
Yep. Long-time listeners, first-time callers.
Actually, this is the first time you guys ever called in because you always were so gracious enough to come down to the studio every time you've been here. We appreciate that. But calling in is just as good for this holiday episode because we're in between the two holidays for the Christmas and the New Year's. And it's the last show.
And everybody else has off, but we're working.
Not us.
As I said, we're working.
I don't want you guys to feel bad, but we actually, for the holidays, we actually had this catered. So we had food in the back for you and stuff like that. And so don't feel bad. I'm kidding, of course.
Well, we are a little disappointed we're going to be missing out on our post-interview diner outing.
Yes. There you go. It's always good times.
Yeah.
But, you know, the last time we showed up, Hassan didn't come anyway. So we were like, forget it. I'm staying home. I'll call in.
I didn't know you guys were going to be on the phone, but even though I work after this, I was going to show up.
Exactly.
There you go.
So if anybody has any trouble listening to us,
tough. The first tough half hour of It Came From The Radio.
So if anybody has any trouble listening to us on the air, you can go online to www.am1240wgbb.com. Listen to us on the live audio streaming. Also on the GBB website, you can see Charlie, myself, and Brian, and the catered food that we have in the background on the GBB web camera in live definition. Yeah. And for those of you who don't know, and who are listening to this in the future on archives, we are available on iHeartRadio. So for you guys out there who are listening to us, we are available on iHeartRadio. Want to listen to us there? You can. So that's kind of cool. And we're
I would like to say, first off, happy birthday to a friend of the show, Matt Greenfield. He is 26 today. He's our resident...
the Power Ranger guy, right?
Power Ranger guy, yeah. And also many other... science fiction, a plethora of facts.
I thought Mark was our resident Power Ranger guy.
But Matt is also a plethora of information about other science fiction.
I would never dress up as the Power Ranger, and he does.
He does.
Wow. All right. Yeah. All right.
There you go. So, anyway. Just want to wish him a happy birthday out there.
So let's take it away with the news.
You look so professional with that laptop and the news.
Yeah.
That's why I opened my tablet. I have nothing on it, but I just wanted to look professional.
That's why you're holding it away from
for the webcam.
Yeah, Mark got a laptop for Christmas?
No.
Oh, look on the webcam, son.
It's a crazy behind-the-scenes story, but I'm using the laptop for the news today. Let's see. The news is brought to you in part by the Big Apple Con, of which we are the official show of. They are going to have a 20th anniversary con in March the 7th, if I'm not mistaken. And the headliner is none other than the Green Power Ranger, Jason David Frank. It's going to be a one-day event in New York. Tickets are on sale now. And I know they're going to be having VIP tickets coming up soon. And the website is www.nycbm.com. That's New York Comic Book Marketplace. Initials only, nycbm.com. And let's see what we got for the news. This is going to be very difficult because it's not on paper. So I'm just going to go with what is in order. The Interview took in more than $1 million on a limited Christmas Day release in 331 mostly independent theaters and a $5.99 video on demand rental option on YouTube, Google Play, and other sites. This is a kind of a crazy thing, and it also kind of marks the first time ever that a wide, quote-unquote, wide-release movie is released in the theaters and on video on demand at the same time. So it's kind of going to start a precedent to see how well they make money on this type of deal where it's released in the theaters and in the video on demand. Because as you know, there's smaller movies, independent movies, which do this all the time. But this is the first major motion picture release to happen, although the circumstances are crazy. For those of you who don't know, the short version.
those of you who are in a shell and don't know.
First, crawl out from under that rock, and then listen up.
Yes. The movie Interview is about James Franco and Seth Rogen as their news reporters and the producer go to North Korea to kill Kim Jong-un. Kim Jong-un didn't think this was a good idea, and he threatened the United States on it. And then somehow, some way, a separate group, which may or may not be connected to Korea, hacked into Sony, released sensitive information such as emails, social security numbers, pay grades, movies, they released movies online, all released online, they got hacked, and then they threatened to have to blow up theaters if they played this movie. Sony said, all right, we're not going to play the movie. And then everybody was like, Sony, you guys are cowards and whatnot. And then the president is like, Sony, you're a coward. And then Sony's like, well, we're not really cowards. It was actually the movie theaters that couldn't play the movie. So now we have to figure out a way to get this movie out to prove that we're not cowards. And hence, a small independent chain called the Alamo, if I'm not mistaken, they picked up, they signed a deal, exclusive deal to be in the theaters, put it out there, $1 million made. How about that?
You know what? You know what I say to that?
What do you say to that, Charlie?
I'm glad you asked. I said, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. I mean, they didn't want to put it out for the safety of the people, the right. theaters. And if they did put it out, and God forbid something happened, people would be saying, well, why'd you put it out? You exactly. had so much, you had all those threats, and what made you put it out? So it's a thing, damned if you do, damned if you don't. Sony doesn't mind because they're not going to be in the theaters. The poor people will be in the theaters being blown up, you know. So, of course,
yeah,
I said,
like
well,
Mark,
it was the
like
theaters.
Mark
yeah.
Sorry, yeah. No, I happen to agree with you, but like Mark was saying, the question about whether or not doing this kind of day and date release with the theater chain and the video on demand, was it successful? I think Sony can resoundingly say yes. Mm-hmm. It was successful in that they were able to get the movie out, but no, from a financial standpoint, they got killed on this movie where it could have been another $100 million Seth Rogen movie.
Yeah.
Right. I also think, you know, honestly, you can't have it both ways. If you say cancel the movie, then you cancel the movie. Just say, look, we canceled it because, you know, we didn't want anybody to get blown up because of a movie, a dumb movie, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just, yep. I mean, that's not criticism. It's a dumb movie. It's a comedy. But Sony then backpedals and says, well, it wasn't our fault, but the theaters pulled it. Like, come on, just stand by it. Like, we pulled it because we didn't want anybody to die. It's a perfectly reasonable position to take on it.
100% agree.
But they wish-washed all through the whole thing, and that's why they're coming under fire for, you know, being corporate. Which is basically what they were. They never said that they weren't anything more than that, but it's never been more apparent that they were corporate than it is now.
And the biggest thing with it, which made no sense, was after they kind of decided not to release the movie, and they made a small theater chain deal. What didn't make sense to me was eventually it came out North Korea may or may not have been involved, but you knew there was going to be more of an investigation, but there was still a hype train behind this film, and they could have easily taken this and thrown it into their summer release schedule and said, okay, well, we're finally doing it, and then at least you have the motivation behind it to at least get it a, you know, 2,500 theater count release. Because, like you said, I mean, video on demand, it's a great avenue for independence, but you're talking about a big studio movie. They got hammered in opening weekend.
Yeah.
So they could have promoted this as the movie North Korea does not want you to see. Come see the interview over the summer.
They could have done anything.
It would have beat Avengers.
Yeah.
So speaking of Damned If You Do and Damned If You Don't,
Mr. Segway. Mm-hmm.
For those of you who remember, there was a little movie called Kickboxer, which launched the career of Jean-Claude Van Damme. It turns out that actress and MMA fighter Gina Carano has joined the cast of a Kickboxer remake.
Oh, boy.
And... and it stars Dave Bautista, stuntman-turned-actor Alani Moussi, UFC welterweight champion George S. Pierre, and none other than Jean-Claude Van Damme.
What is he, somebody's father now? Yeah. I can still do my split, but I'm somebody's father.
I know we're not supposed to do follow-up questions, Mark.
Yes.
But is anywhere in your article, does it say why?
He wants some money? That's why.
The search for more money.
No, Van Damme's motives are obvious. What is everybody else's motive? Kickboxer. It's not like that. It was not like it's episode four, you know? Like, it's not like that was a milestone of cinema, Kickboxer.
It launched Jean-Claude Van Damme's career.
It's not like it was Rocky. Come on. It didn't technically. I think actually what technically launched Van Damme's career was Cyborg, but that's another radio show. We all know
when we were kids and we got into fist fights in school, you know, all the bullies would sit there with their tray of glue and broken glass, and we all had to put our hands in it. Okay, we don't say that this wasn't a classic cinema piece that has changed the lives for many kids fighting with oil in their hands.
Oh, I sense another debate.
And, of course, the classic helicopter kick. That's Van Damme's thing.
Right.
All right, okay.
Did you see the new commercial with him with the trucks?
Yes.
Yeah, doing that split with the trucks.
You guys, hold on. So you guys are getting behind this. That's what you're saying.
I would watch a Kickboxer remake.
Okay.
I did not watch it unless it's Jean-Claude Van Damme does fight again. I'm voting no matter what.
Yeah. Thank you.
That was the classic. I love the classic rivalry between him and Steven Seagal. Like, Steven...
Yeah, like, that's a contest.
Yeah, there you go. And Steven was like, he's never been in a real competition. He's really done that. And now Steve Seagal can't even do anything except put, you know, fold his hands on top of his stomach.
He's good at eating ham sandwiches.
Yeah, there you go.
He's got that on lock.
Watch, the door swings open and Steven walks in. What are you talking about? Nothing. I'm running. Yeah.
Well, look at it this way.
Mark? How should we look at it?
Jean-Claude Van Damme was in the Expendable franchise. Steven Seagal is not. And
Steven Seagal said no.
Exactly.
If we're being clear, and he was a 10th degree black belt in his day, he just kind of went the wrong way. Weight-wise.
He did say no because he didn't want to be in the same movie with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah, it's like...
He did not.
He did.
I think they wanted to make him a bad guy, and I think he said no. He's like, if I don't get to kick someone's ass and, like, be the hero, I'm not in it.
Well, I'm just saying that Jean-Claude Van Damme still pretty much could do a lot of that stuff. Steven Seagal, he hires stunt people to do his kicks and stuff. Which in Aikido there are no kicks, if you know anything about the martial art. All of a sudden in this movie, in the Belly of the Beast, he had stunt doubles
You're
doing,
watching those movies?
Doing kicks.
Oh man!
Well, I watched it because he was so, and I should be the one talking, but he was so overweight, and he couldn't even talk. He couldn't even breathe. So I was saying, how the hell is he going to do this stuff? All of a sudden, he throws a kick, and I'm saying, what? I'm saying, you know, one of these things does not believe. Keto has no kicks. All of a sudden, he's throwing kicks, and he could breathe doing that. He comes down, and he's still talking. But anyway.
I think the
effective end of Steven Seagal's career came with Executive Decision, when he was in it for like 6 seconds, and he got sucked out into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And the movie still, you know, everyone went at that time to see Steven Seagal in a hostage, you know, hijacking movie.
Yeah.
And they killed him. And so, spoiler alert, whoever hasn't seen the 20-year-old movie by now.
Well,
and that I've never seen like a successful Steven Seagal movie that wasn't a joke since then.
Yeah. It's like that movie with the sharks when what was it? Samuel L. Jackson? Was that him?
Snakes on a Plane?
Deep Blue Sea?
No. It was a serious movie. And I don't know whether it's Samuel L. Jackson or some, but he was the star of the movie, and he goes up by the tank. He says, I think we should all calm down. The shark jumps out of the water and eats him.
Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah. I didn't know who
I don't know if I would qualify that as a
I don't know. Lawrence Fishburne. I don't know which star it was.
It was Sam Jackson, and it was Deep Blue Sea.
Thank you. And yeah, he's standing by the tank, and I love Samuel J. And he's standing by the tank, and all of a sudden, the freaking shark comes up and eats him. And I'm saying, I'm like, all right, go make the popcorn now because I ain't watching this movie.
Didn't LL Cool J get nominated for an Oscar for that?
Yes, he did.
So, right?
Yeah. In Elseworlds, he got an Oscar.
I know my history. I'm pretty sure he got an Oscar.
So speaking of old movies,
Mr. Segway,
around this time every year, under the terms of the National Film Preservation Act, the Library of Congress selects 25 films to be added to the National Film Registry, which preserves films for future generations.
Well, thank you for that information, Mark.
That was like a Cappy Dick fun fact from the old Long Island Press.
Each selection must be at least 10 years old and are considered to be culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant.
And had to be rebooted about 8 times.
of note, some of the selections are Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yay!
Nice.
The Big Lebowski.
Yay!
Nice.
Rio Bravo from 1959.
Oh my God,
1969.
1959, yeah.
The original House of Wax, starring Vincent Price.
Vincent Price.
Which would be the first full-length 3D color film produced.
Right.
And released by a major American film studio. Rosemary's Baby from 1968. Saving Private Ryan from 1998.
Nice.
The original Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory from 1971.
Oh, beautiful. Love that movie. Go ahead.
So now all these films are preserved for future generations to appreciate them.
Well, I must say, they were good choices.
Yeah, most of them are going to be rebooted, Hassan. And yes, they are great choices, Charlie.
Yeah.
I think Rio Bravo has not been remade, nor The Big Lebowski, but everything else has.
Rio Bravo was just rebooted as Fury.
Yeah.
Here you go. I watched Rio Bravo when it came out.
Wow.
1959,
See,
yeah.
So now one of your movies
I was four.
He really is the senior correspondent.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Just want to make sure you all know that I'm the senior correspondent.
Now, are these movies preserved on Netflix or Hulu? Which one?
Oh, man. That's
wow. That's
all right. So for the last bit of news.
And
are we still on the news?
And is Korea going to allow us to see these movies?
Yes.
That's what we have to ask.
Yes, we are still on the news segment of the show.
Okay.
From the You Gotta Love the Japanese Department. All right.
I didn't say that.
Wow, how big is that department? I didn't even know we had that.
It's one of the sub-departments in the back.
Where is that located? in our vast organization. Okay, go ahead.
Triumph, a lingerie company, has created a set of color-changing brassieres seemingly influenced by the box office hit Frozen. They're called the Close Sister Bras, as they're officially named. Can instantly change colors when friends wearing a matching pair come into contact with each other. So, yes, they are mood bras.
Well,
oh my God.
Hold it. Wait a minute. Friends come into contact with each other. Yeah. Is this a movie? Because I'm in.
Contact?
Wow. Read that again.
Okay.
They come in contact with each other. I just want to make sure.
The Close Sisters Bra, as they're called, can instantly change colors when friends wearing a matching pair come in contact with each other. I'm sure they don't have to be friends, but if they two women...
So they come in contact with each other. How does that work?
There is a video, which you can see, where it has the girls standing next to each other and the bras change from light to dark.
Nanotechnology in the bra actually activates when it's close to nanotechnology of another bra. And then that's when the world takeover starts.
So we're talking about mood bras.
Yes, you got it right. Mood bras.
What the hell does it have to do with frozen?
Who's gonna know, though?
Because, well, all right. So let's see. Let me answer one question at a time. What it has to do with frozen? Supposedly, well, I've seen the bras. They have
a frozen theme. I want to know who knows. Who's gonna know about this?
They have a frozen theme.
That's
on the
a
bras.
Whole new meeting to let it go. I'm just saying. Go ahead.
They have a frozen motif on the bras of design. That's what it has to do with frozen. That's what they said.
What are they, bras for kids?
I would hope not. I would hope not. And to answer your question, Hassan, who would know?
Really cool or really creepy?
Who would know? The women that come in contact with each other. I don't know.
And
what do you mean you don't know?
It's two bras. And when they come close, they change colors. I don't know.
I thought all bras are like that.
Now, since the women don't walk around with their bras exposed, so two women, they have a blouse on, they get together. How do you know those things are changing?
You
know.
That's what I'm saying.
Well,
all due respect, I understand that this is news, but Mark,
this only happens.
Your fault. There's no way you could have expected to read this news to us and not expect follow-up to this particular scene.
It could be a plus. It could be a plus to us guys when we have two girls who say, we have the mood bras on. Oh, let me see them change color. Yeah, right. Okay.
So Hassan, are you saying that it would have been better if they would have had a bra and underwear for males so that way it changes color?
Whoa. No, that's not going to happen. You go to Brooklyn and try to market that stuff.
You mean when men and women come together?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I can see that.
Not when two dudes come together. Yeah. No judgment.
Why, what's wrong with that? With 620, 415,
no judgment here.
Right?
Well, they have certain sections.
The radio does not condone discrimination of homosexuals or any other group.
So
I'm saying I'm not saying anything about the product. Unfortunately, which is my job, I'm blaming you, Mark.
Because I don't know how you could have brought this news piece to us and not expected us to ask you 100 questions about it once you read it off.
Really?
The executive saying.
Oh, my God, here comes the executive voice. Here's the executive voice. Let's see.
With powerful productions such as Frozen, the depictions in movies and the like of sisters helping each other and becoming more confident have moved all of Japan.
This just keeps
What a bunch of shovel, please. Boom, boom. And now, since the event of Frozen, so do you have to keep the bras in the freezer?
Wow.
They're sisters helping each other. That's what they do in the movie Frozen.
Sisters helping each other. I've seen movies. About sisters helping each other.
Yeah, me too.
And they like were only
those,
shown in like these dark theaters.
Kind of movies.
Yeah, dark theaters, and just not the best of people go in to see them. But anyway, go ahead.
So
carry on.
I've seen one of those in the theater.
So
yeah, well, senior correspondent. That's the only way I could have saw him back then.
So anybody who's interested can look up the Close Sisters bras.
What did they call them?
The Close sisters' bras, just like the
oh
girls
my
in Frozen.
God. Everything They're you close. Say just makes this story worse. Everything, executive, everything is making this terrible. This is a bad idea.
The close sisters.
Mark, if you mean anything, I've never seen Frozen, and now I want to.
See?
Well, I got to tell you, I'm going to go home and go right on that. Yeah, the close sisters bra.
God.
The close sisters bra, yes.
Wow.
The close
Oh, hello. Hello, Kim Lee. I'm wearing a black blouse. I need a black bra. Mine red now. Come close to me. Yeah, right. And now, what colors do they change?
Well, according to the video, which I've seen, it's...
You've seen the video. Ah, okay. So somebody's been on that website before me.
They were light blue to dark blue were the colors that they showed.
Light blue to dark blue.
Yes. Dark blue.
Wow.
When they change polka dot and leopard, I'm impressed.
They got to start somewhere. And so yeah.
They got to start somewhere. They didn't have to start at all with this.
That's how I feel about it, but
well, pretty much it's going to be now you'll know he's in love with you when his underwear changes to red. You know? Could you imagine that?
So,
I can't imagine any of it.
Mark, there's no way you could get out of this bringing a story to the table like that.
Well, this is a good way to end
your internet history when this radio show is over.
This is a good way
to end the year in the news.
The calendar year in the news segment. So we're ready for our break.
Oh, boy, we're ready for our break.
We're right back where we came from the radio.
Maybe.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music. Wow, that was hot. Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to A Cane Fun Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking along with our senior correspondent, Charlie Saladino, Hassan Godwin on the phone.
No title,
Hassan. Wait, you were the Wanderer. Wasn't that what you were called?
Yeah, but you're not using it, so I guess I don't have a title.
I forgot. You're the Wanderer. There you go. You're wandering for those bras. That's what you're doing right now.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I am out on a mission to find those
bras. Or you could be Hollow Man. You're here, but we just don't see you.
There you go.
Yeah, I can do that, too.
And, of course, our special guests, Jared and Jordan Burrell from Loaded Barrel Studios.
Yep. Hey.
So, in case you guys haven't figured it out yet, this week we're going to be talking to, with, and about our guests, Jared and Jordan Burrell from Loaded Barrel Studios.
Isn't it great that they are on the phone with us so we can
do that? Yeah, what a coincidence.
What a coincidence.
You guys have, we've known you for quite some time, like 2008, 2007, right?
Yeah, is it that long? Yeah.
Because I think we met in the Philly Con around that time when we went to that party.
Yeah, wow.
You remember the party, right?
Yes, I do. There was some wrestler's house or something, right?
The house was, oh, all right. This is the weird connection of the house. The house we were at was this party. I mean, we went there beforehand, but it was at that convention in Philly. It was on the Cosby Show. Lisa Bonet's husband, I think it was.
Yes.
It was his house, in the show. That was a claim to fame that we were there. And
whose husband?
Lisa Bonet on the show.
Would that be Kravitz then?
No, the husband on the show.
Oh, yes, the husband on the show.
Oh, okay.
The character.
I'm thinking Lenny's house? I would have went.
Yeah, we're at Lenny Kravitz's house.
And they were taking pictures of the bottle, the Jay-Z bottle, was it, right? Was it Jay-Z bottle?
No, it was Ciroc.
Ciroc.
Oh, yes.
P. Diddy, yes. Puff Daddy then, I don't know.
So we've known these guys for quite some time, and every time they from when I first saw their stuff was an amazing thing. And then they came out, because they had the Brielle Nahara, then they came out with the Gray, and then they continue on with more stuff with Accolades. They are actors, they are martial artists, they are filmmakers, so it's amazing how far we've known you for so much, and you constantly have new things to tell us about. So, leading the question a bit, what have you been up to recently?
Dead air.
Close Sisters Bras by the Burrell Brothers.
Good job, guys.
Yeah, well, funny enough, we've been working on a pair of matching underpants this year, change color when we're closer. It's fun because Jordan just flew in from L.A., so, you know, our underpants haven't changed color in a long time, and now that he's home here back in New Jersey, wow, all of a sudden my underpants are glowing, so.
They don't change colors, they glow. That's even better.
Yes.
Right.
Well, that's smarter because...
I don't understand the point of color-changing bras if you can't tell under the clothes, but if they were glowing, then at least you get a little bit of light coming through the thread, you know?
depending on what you're wearing on top of it, it could be quite a laser show.
That's right.
That's the, you know...
Drop a little Molly, let's do a little EDM, put on your color-changing bra.
So besides, not even glow in the dark, they're close glow bros.
God.
Oh my God, that is such a great name. Mark is just so happy with himself.
Besides making close bro glow underwear, what else have you been doing? I love that, close glow bro.
No.
No?
No.
Let it glow.
Let it glow. Let it glow. Okay.
Let it glow. Let it glow.
We got to get Jesse Eisenberg to be a spokesperson.
Oh, yes, Jesse Eisenberg. That's a callback to a show.
My goal is for it came for the radio and for Loaded Barrel Studios to become big enough that one day Jesse Eisenberg's people do indeed send us a cease and desist.
Oh my God, that's a callback for you listening. You can check the archives and hear that reference. So what have you been?
Wait, you're gonna answer the question.
What have you?
Was he Lex Luthor the last time we saw you?
No.
This was like 2 years ago that he was the cease and desist. The last time you were here, it wasn't that. It was two shows ago, you guys.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
I think I did one without Jordan, too.
Yeah, that was one without me.
Yeah,
that was the only one. My underpants weren't changing colors.
Man.
Did we forget that there was no chuckle on that joke?
There.
You already said the color glow bro thing. It's already over.
Oh, my God.
Awesome. So, you know, you're going to answer this question. What have you been up to?
This is just my way of killing time to say not much.
Well, didn't your book get nominated for an award? And didn't
we actually Real Nahar that the graphic novel we put out we released it at Comic-Con last fall, and then it hit the stores this past April. It won actually 7 awards. Most of them I don't remember. We won best.
So many awards you don't even remember them.
I won Best Designer Designer of the Year at the LA Book Festival, which is cool. And then this past summer, the trailer that I directed, that Jordan and I produced together for the graphic novel, which was originally done to try and promote the production of the film, was nominated for a Geeky Award, which was really cool. It was a huge event in Hollywood. Randy Couture presented our award. We didn't win, but it was an awesome experience. Got to meet some really cool people. Big Hollywood event. Met the director of Sharknado. Throwing that out there.
Yes.
Oh my God, our idol.
Yeah. So since then we've just been we've been promoting the hell out of the book. Have some film projects in the works. Got a short film I directed. That I'm in post-production for now, so hopefully I'll be able to talk a little bit more about that the next time we do an interview. Signed on, I'm doing editing some shorts and whatnot. Jordan's got, I don't know, Jordan, what do you have going on in Los Angeles, in Hollywood?
We pretty much work together, throw that out there. We recently optioned one of the comics that we're actually going to shop for writers and directors right now, and we're adapting one of the projects into a television series, so we're going to see how that kind of works out before we go out with producers. So it's been great. I mean, this past season, we promoted the book, but for the most part, we have sort of taken the studio, and most people got attracted not just the stories themselves, but the designs as well. So we've been promoting prints and T-shirts and skateboards and that kind of stuff, and it was our most successful Comic-Con to date was just this past fall, so we're excited to take the tour to Los Angeles in the spring and then kind of move it from there to see, you know, where people's desires are for Loaded Barrel Studios moving forward. I think it's kind of an exciting point because people used to just like the comics and not know where it came from, and now people are getting the design stuff and the prints and the autographs and all that kind of stuff, and at the same time we're moving on the television and film front. So it's kind of exciting, actually, to not be as stressed trying to release a book, but instead kind of seeing where this can go.
I always find it funny that every time I always ask you guys what's going on, you're like, I don't know nothing. And I know more stuff than you guys do. And then when you start getting going, you're like, oh, yeah, there's this too. And oh, yeah, there's that too.
Because the problem is that now that we're buddies and we've known you for a long time, it feels like getting together like on the weekend. And it's like, hey, man, what's going on?
Nothing. Not much. What you been up to? Same old thing. I don't know.
Yeah, underwear that changes like, color.
Yeah, buddy. Except you guys are like the overachieving buddies that we can't stand. You get together at your barbecue every year, and it's like, yeah, me and my supermodel girlfriend, we're going to the... And you're like, yeah, I just drove up in my Hyundai, and, you know, it's okay.
I mean, we're the next time you're at our barbecue, I can show you my bank statement if you want to feel any better.
All right, so... Why don't you tell us about the evolution? I mean, you guys had, like I said, we've known each other a long time. You just said that things have been changing for you with the production-wise, but as conventions go, do you feel a difference in conventions as time's been changing? Because we've been talking about this for the past couple of weeks on how conventions have itself changed from what it was, a comic convention, to more of a pop culture and even a cosplay type thing going on.
I feel like when we started, the first show we did was New York Comic Con in 2007, and we were upstairs in the Artist Alley, and it was upstairs then, and like we were kind of like the only like real booth in the like Artist Alley small press area, so it was a great show for us. But going there that year, we also went out to San Diego,
seeing the like the cons itself, they were pop culture conventions. You know, the film presence was huge, TV was huge, video games were there. But, like, the industry itself was much more accessible. You know, it felt more like there were, you know, I remember that very first Comic-Con, like, Paul Levitz, the publisher of DC, was, like, at our booth. You know, all the editors were coming by. Like, we'd be meeting people, we'd be seeing people on the floor. People from different film studios and stuff would be coming by. Like, people were accessible. You saw the artists, you saw, you know, the publishers, the editors, the filmmakers on the floor. And you could just walk up to them and see them and meet them and network and whatnot. And at least from a creator's perspective, it was amazing. Now, you don't see that. You don't really see those same people on the floor. They even changed a lot of these shows, and we've done a bunch of them across the country this past year, where, you know, you don't even, a lot of them get, you know, person's name or, you know, who they are at the company, like, on the badge anymore, and everything's become a lot more anonymous and behind the scenes, and that sort of, that presence that, oh my God, I have access to people and things and, you know, companies and studios and whoever that I didn't normally have access to, doesn't really feel like that anymore. It feels very commercial lately, to be honest, and not in really a great way. And it does feel like, from a producer standpoint, from, you know, someone that's out there to actually sell stuff, that people may be burning out on spending money at some of these things. Even though we surprised ourselves and had actually the single greatest convention we ever had at New York this year, it does feel like the general atmosphere seems to be, I don't know, it's different. It's a different climate.
I saw you guys had a huge, probably the biggest booth I've ever seen at this past New York Comic Con. And you guys were right next to the Chevy guys, so that helped.
It definitely did. I mean, you know, location and all these things are key. And we did have a corner booth. We'd have a larger staff like we did when we started to take over. But, you know, even to get that kind of success, we had to adapt a lot. You know, doing art prints and stuff. Versus selling the books, which we're doing also, but you got to find new ways to stay relevant and to find people and to get different access points and entry points into, you know, fandoms.
So how do you know this? I mean, you have to know this months in advance before you're going to a con. I mean, you can't just show up and like, oh, I hope we do this, and then like, oh crap, this didn't work.
Oh,
you have
to. You really can do that.
Really.
Give me 3 days, Mark. I'll make a successful con.
Really? Is that a guarantee?
I've done it.
All right.
I don't like doing it. You know, New York is definitely one that I know what we're doing in advance. But there are certainly some of them. I've certainly flown across the country with a suitcase with, you know, filled with all the stuff for our booth, being like, I have no idea what we're doing this weekend, and I don't know who's working the booth. And somehow or other, we pull it off, and, you know, at least make a couple bucks.
That sounds like me. That's how we kind of just, every week, you're just, let's see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, I think it goes to, like, what we were just talking about. Is I think, like, the temperature at some of these conventions is just sort of changing and evolving, and it's becoming much more of a weekend event than it is something special where you're finding some really good product. And I think that's a good thing in certain ways and a bad thing in others, but really, it's almost from convention to convention, from season to season, you're finding out on the floor really what that is, as opposed to anticipating it month in advance, because it shouldn't matter. As great as New York Comic Con was, I think the next one we're doing is WonderCon in April.
No?
Well, we may do WonderCon in April. apparently we're discussing it. And
we're out of the country. I'm going on vacation.
But you have no idea. You have no idea if that's the place where all of a sudden indie comics is in again, or design prints are in again, or steampunk is in again, and you won't know until the floor. So
I mean, what's your guys' take on it? You said you've been talking about this the last few weeks. Because I hear the conversations going back and forth, and you hear it, like, online. You know, I definitely heard grumblings from artists and whatnot that it has become, like, cosplay cons. And people get, on our side of the table, I've heard people being really frustrated that they're not making sales, and how the day, you know, the time of sitting behind your booth and just sort of waiting for someone to come by and buy something is over. But we never really did that in the first place. But regardless of, you know, that, we are seeing differences and changes. But I was curious, I mean, what are you guys' opinions on it?
I think you probably
go to more of these things than we do.
My personal opinion from seeing this trend for years, my personal opinion is that this con belonged to us. It belonged to the artists. It belonged to everybody. It's gotten so popular that big business now is saying, oh, here we go. Look what we have now. And it's turning it into like a travesty. In other words, now it's like everything is, you know, and the cons, they love it because they get their money from these people. And it's like a big promotional thing now for big business. It's not, we're losing it. I feel we're losing it. It's going to, down the road, it's going to be where the people of the con who are in it are going to create their own and not allow the big business into it so it could be what it originally was. You see that in everything. Now the stadiums are getting named MetLife Stadium, Citi Field Stadium. You know, corporate always gets their niche into something great and ruin it, and they ruin it. So I feel I'm very scared to see the future of the cons like this. Chevy has a thing, and now all of a sudden, you know, you go in there and there's things that have nothing to do with science fiction and they're promoting themselves, you know. So I'm very, very leery about that, because having seen going to the con and seeing Chevy there, I was like, oh, really? You know, and I don't know. It could help or it could hinder. But,
you know, it's a weird catch 22 because, you know, this year, New York was the first year that it was bigger than San Diego. It was like 151,000 people, which was insane.
Right.
And it's huge and it's great. And, you know, the comic culture has taken over. You know, I mean, Hollywood, like, you know, we've seen Marvel and DC's slate for the next like 20 years. Looks like we're going to have like 15 comic book movies a year. You know, and there is, once it becomes like this big studio thing and this mix of corporate and whatnot, you know, there is that question of, is there a burning point? Is there, like, this sort of place where we all tip over and say, all right, it's enough. We're good.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And you know, my fear is that, you know, you're going to get to that point, and some of the properties that we know and we love, we may start to not love so much.
Right.
And that part's a little scary to me.
And you got to remember, the corporations didn't make the con. We did. The people did. The fans did. You guys did. All the artists and all the fans that appreciate the artists, they made the cons. It's trendy now to go there. And the cosplay has gotten enormous because of all the worship to these comics and these superheroes and stuff. So big business didn't do this for us. Big business just jumped on the bandwagon, and I think they're going to be ruining it down the road.
It's a kind of an odd transformation that's happening. The best example I can give would be that New York Comic Con, the biggest convention in the entire United States, decided to have a smaller con over the summer.
Right, right.
And it was just for comics, a good old-fashioned comic book convention, only comic book guys there, no big business. And it was a great feeling, but it was extremely different than a convention that I'm used to. Mm-hmm. When we started out doing tables way back when with the Big Apple Con, it was one thing. And then this table we had, you know, this is your first table, Charlie.
Yeah.
I can tell the difference on how things were and what we needed to do. Social media is a big presence. For us, it wasn't always about selling something, so I can't say for a selling point of view, but just to get the word out and let people know about us, it's very different than it is back then to now, and that's social media and stuff and what have you. And I think there's a place for both of them, where they can have the corporate stuff and the independent stuff. And one of the things that we did from way back when was that I saw how everybody, you know, does the corporate stuff. Everybody has the big names. So we, as a show, always like to do the independent guys, and hence that's why we look out for new and interesting things, much like the Loaded Barrel stuff. And we have them on our show, and we talk about these guys because Everybody's talking about Marvel. Everybody's talking about DC. Whatever. But it's there's so much nice stuff out there.
We want to get genius stuff on. The stuff that these guys are doing. The stuff that other people are busting their chops and going poor doing. And,
right.
And just for the love of the game.
Right.
And that's what we want to get out. We you know, it's like... And that would be our goal.
Right. So it's always the independent guys, and that's why we love having the Loaded Barrel guys on the show.
And that's why we love being here.
Because you guys have a unique spin on things, which yeah. I had not seen up until that point, and you do it so well. And then on top of that, it's good. It's not even like it's just different.
It's amazing. Good. It's great.
I mean, Hassan doesn't like anything, and he likes your stuff. So right there.
We appreciate that. I don't even know how I even got involved in that, but okay.
How you got dragged into it?
Yeah, just now.
Because
somehow I got denigrated while you were praising someone else. That's really amazing. Well done. Well done. You know what? The issue is, yeah, absolutely. Everything is becoming corporate, and I think the trend of the day is that we're all supposed to kind of be going along with it. And people are confused because the corporations have really cleverly managed to placate us by giving us an overabundance of things that we don't need and didn't ask for, but we don't mind getting. And right. We don't realize that the grassroots element is pretty much gone.
Right.
I equate this also with Star Wars, you know, with Disney, you know. And it's like, oh, we'll give you 10 more Star Wars movies. And everyone's like, oh, okay, well then, yay Disney, you know, regardless of the fact that maybe the quality isn't going to be as good. So the only thing I can't really complain about is like, yeah, maybe smaller conventions and stuff like that, maybe less people would show up, and maybe those things wouldn't be so miserable to try to navigate around because, I don't know, maybe it's just me getting old, but New York Comic Con was really difficult to deal with in its popularity with over 100.
I mean, you are getting old.
That's true. Yes, and I
have to agree because I mean the worst part of the entire weekend is that one time a day where I allow myself to leave the booth to go to the bathroom, and it's like a 2-hour trek. So I do understand that the traffic's ridiculous, but I mean, I don't know, it's an interesting point that you make on a lot of that stuff. The whole thing kind of reminds me of, like, rock and alternative music in the 90s, you know, which I know Hassan's a big fan of, which is why I'm going there.
Thank you. But, well done.
You know, like, when in the 90s, and I'm sure before, whatever, rock was so anti-corporate. You know, and you had a lot of music tours that didn't have the corporate sponsor, and it was against the corporate sponsor, and you had bands like Pearl Jam standing up against Ticketmaster and all that stuff. And right. At some point, these great, honest bands that were grassroots, that came from the fans, that got bigger because they were good and because they were, you know, self-promoters or whatever, they lost to the corporate sponsor. You know, you had like the Vans Warped Tour is like more corporate sponsors and stuff. I mean, I can't even recognize, you know, the lineups on those. I mean, even, you know, Woodstock in the 90s became a corporate thing. It was like $10 water bottles and that kind of crap.
Yeah, and the fans burned the place down.
I'm laughing. Woodstock in the 90s.
So,
right, but I mean, that was.
Well, I know.
Well, I hate to cut you off because we got less than 3 minutes, right? Oh, we got about three minutes left. So
all I have to say is when you guys become. Which I've always said from the first show, you guys are going to be monsters in the business. And when you do that, then it's like a catch-22. The corporate sponsors are going to be coming to you, and you're definitely not going to turn them down. But it's you guys will be monsters. And just remember us when you're out there. And I'd like you to know you were part of history on our historical show.
So I just want to mention quickly.
I much appreciate it.
Yeah, very appreciate it.
So Jared Jordan.
I disagree with everything that you like.
So Jared Jordan, quickly tell us where we can find your stuff. So let's get that before we run out of time.
All right, before we run out of time, you can find us as always on Facebook .com/LoadedBarrelStudios and LoadedBarrelStudios.com, LoadedBarrelStudios.com. I think I'm on Twitter at at Loaded Barrel 1. And Instagram, I think it's Loaded Barrel Studios, but I barely use it. And if you can't find any of that stuff, just go to Hassan's house. He pretty much has everything.
So I guess we'll do a quick final thought. Charlie, quick final thought.
Quick final thought. Once again, you guys were part of our historical broadcast where me and Mark weren't even in the studio and Brian was running the whole show. We were interviewing people at two different cons.
Yes.
MCon and Comic-Con.
Hassan, quick final thought.
I really sincerely love Loaded Barrel. Thank you guys for coming every time and being part of this crazy show that we have.
Jared, final thought?
Jesse Eisenberg!
Jordan, final thought?
I hope North Korea hacks this radio.
And we're going right out. We're going right out to see those bra videos.
So that about does it for this week on It Came From Radio. Join us right here and every week on WGBB. If you miss any part of the show, you can go on to our website www.itcamefromradio.com. Links to the archives, which will be up in a week or so, and we're also available on iHeartRadio. So listen to us on there as well. We will see you
next year.
Next year.
Have a great New Year's, guys.
Take care.
Happy New Year, guys.
You have been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.